Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, good, and good martinis for our listeners today. And a reminder that the Three Martini Lunch today is sponsored by Patriot Mobile. And we'll have more about them a little bit later in this edition. Jim, it's nice to have good, good, and good martinis. Just think how many days this year we had bad, bad, and bad, or some combination of bad and crazy. We're making up for it. We're finally getting closer to our good quote, although I'm sure we're well behind for the year.
I was going to say, this is our effort to cheer everyone. If you want to put 2016 in the ash heap of history, hey, we can go out on a high note.
That's right. All right. Our first good martini comes from the opening story in today's Morning Jolt, authored by Jim, of course. If you don't subscribe, do it, because you're missing out if you don't. The title, Let's Not Jinx It, But This Incoming Cabinet Looks Pretty Darn Good So Far. Let's take a look at this Trump administration cabinet. Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Representative Tom Price. Secretary of Transportation, former Labor Secretary Elaine Chao. Secretary of Education, philanthropist Betsy DeVos. Ambassador to the UN, Governor Nikki Haley. White House Chief of Staff, RNC Chair Reince Priebus. National Security Advisor, former Defense Intelligence Agency Director General Michael Flynn. CIA Director, Representative Mike Pompeo. Treasury Secretary, Banker Steven Mnuchin. Commerce Secretary, Financier Wilbur Ross, Administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Indiana Health Policy Consultant Seema Verma. And Jim, when you look at these names, some of them will obviously make you more excited than others. I think most conservatives are pretty darn excited about Tom Price. They're pretty darn excited about Jeff Sessions. I think most people who follow education are pretty excited about Betsy DeVos. And a lot of these other names, Mike Pompeo is another good one there. Some of these other names are certainly ones that don't necessarily engender the same amount of excitement, but they don't bother people. A lot of solid names in there. Personally, the ones that happened yesterday later in the day, I don't know very well, such as Mnuchin or Wilbur Ross. But I know that the Progressive Change Campaign Committee that I somehow get emails from is apoplectic that Mnuchin is going to be Treasury Secretary. So he must have something going for him.
You know what I love about Mnuchin, Greg, besides the fact that his name is hard to pronounce and spell and we're going to have typos for at least for years to come, it's that he financed the X-Men films. And while it may not stand up there with Die Hard as one of the great classics of Western literature, I do believe already he's made my life happier and better. So I thank him, and I think Hugh Jackman thanks him as well. I'm not going to say every one of these is going to thrill conservatives. I think it's safe to say that some of them have very clear records in the realm of policy, and we know where they stand. And some of the guys in finance are coming from a more of a business background, and we may not know exactly how they're going to come down on every little decision. But I'd say, you know, Price, DeVos, particularly as a school choice advocate, Haley, Priebus, kind of, you know, being the traffic cop over at the White House, keeping things going. Seema Verma is exactly the kind of person you'd want to have with helping Price dismantle Obamacare and maybe even get some Medicaid, Medicare reform going on. This is a pretty conservative cabinet. And so I know some people are reacting strongly. You know, the Trump fans are thrilled that I'm applauding the cabinet. The Never Trump crowd thinks I've now completely sold out and gone nuts and assimilated into the collective. I would also note, Greg, we've got, you know, some really good folks who are in the mix and going to Trump Tower and might be in there. You know, the Mitt Romneys, David Petraeuses, Rick Perrys, General Mattis. You know, look, some of these folks are the folks you'd expect to find in almost any other Republican president's cabinet. I mean, these are, you know, well-known, well-liked, respected conservative figures. We talked about Petraeus and his various issues yesterday. But so I'm looking at this and thinking this is considering the kind of people who were around the Trump campaign throughout most of the year and the kind of people who you saw speaking at the convention, this is really a much better than most conservatives had any right to hope for most of the year. And if they can enact conservative policy changes, if people are saying that this is very much a Mike Pence-influenced cabinet. And for those of us who think of ourselves as traditional conservatives and who were wary or many other words in reaction to Donald Trump, this is a really good development. And my other sneaking suspicion to come out of this, and I could be completely wrong, But kind of to foreshadow our next martini, Trump talked about flag burning yesterday, and the world went apoplectic. I mean, they just flipped out, and no one talked about putting somebody like Seema Verma to administrate the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, because that stuff is dry and boring and involves numbers, and you have to actually know policy details and things like that. And so people kind of the political world will naturally gravitate to whatever is most dramatic. And it's almost like Trump knows that his Twitter feed is what he can do to feed the media some sort of giant, loud, noisy, red hot, you know, political fight. And the wonks can actually get stuff done. They actually won't be in the spotlight, that there won't be these giant political fights, because the political world will be focused on, oh, there goes Trump again denouncing Hamilton, or up there he's you know, he's fuming about what he saw on Morning Joe or something like that. Something that seemed silly and inappropriate and kind of, you know, beneath the office of the presidency by Trump might actually serve a very useful purpose, to be sort of a lightning rod for criticism, letting the rest of the folks do their jobs and get things done. And look, if that's the case, it could end up being a golden era for conservative policy, which is not something I expected to say. This is really optimistic, I note, Greg, and maybe somebody's going to say, man, Jim is just popping the Prozac like he never has before. But so far these are good appointments. Now, presuming President Trump allows these guys to do what they want to do and set the details and follows them, we could see, you know, things could really be looking up from the conservative perspective in a way we really would not have imagined for much of the year.
Yeah, a few different thoughts jumping into my mind here. First of all, I think Trump has understood as well as anyone the media's insane penchant for chasing squirrels. They're so easily distracted by other news that he actually potentially can get a lot done. And you're right, one of the biggest concerns about Trump, among many, many other concerns during the campaign, was this guy's not conservative. And even as his message got more conservative in the general election, you just wonder, does this guy actually mean it? Is he just trying to get the base? Is it all trying to win the election? And when we get to the point of actual governing, will any of this actually materialize? We still have to see. But as you mentioned, with a lot of these picks, it seems like a lot of this appears to be sincere. Two other points. The deputy commerce secretary is Todd Ricketts, co-owner of the Chicago Cubs. So if you're looking to win, folks, stick with the Cubs, I guess. And yesterday, as if we haven't ragged on the media enough already today, Jim, I'm sure you saw this on Twitter, where the pool, of course, is hanging out in Trump Tower, seeing who's coming in and out of the elevators. And at one point, one of these young reporters tweeted, Kellyanne Conway walking through towards the elevators with unknown other person. Turned out to be Dan Quayle. That's how poor our media is. He's older than he was in 1993 when he left office. But you can still pick out Dan Quayle. At least you should be able to.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure I've seen him since then. And yes, you know, he was always kind of baby-faced for being vice president. And I'm sure he has aged a bit in recent years. But yeah, this is why we shouldn't trust millennials, Greg. I'm sorry. This is living up to the stereotype. And you're like, who's that old dude? And yes, he used to be vice president. And believe it or not, kid, back in my day, he was a controversial figure. Now, we look at this, Greg, and we suddenly realize, like, you realize Murphy Brown would have been like a 15-minute brouhaha on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Potato, you know, nobody would. Story would have passed in a day.
That reminds me, there's another millennial reporter sometime during the campaign who somebody mentioned Whitewater, and they had no idea what it was. Not even the foggiest clue. I mean, it is a fairly complicated story, but the idea that you don't know what Whitewater has anything to do with shows that you need to learn something other than how to write a story when you go to college.
Crack a book, kiddo.
All right. End of the Get Off Our Lawn segment here on the Three Martini Lunch. And on to the second good martini. And Jim alluded to it in the first martini yesterday. And I'm still not sure exactly why, although perhaps it's happened in a number of these post-election protests. Donald Trump tweets out, nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag. If they do, there must be consequences, perhaps loss of citizenship or a year in jail. Well, that was enough to send just about everybody flying, on right and left, civil libertarians, people who hate flag burning, say, well, you can't really take away their citizenship, you don't have that power, that sort of thing. But here's the amazing part. This is courtesy of Business Insider. A small group of hard left activists burned foot-long U.S. flags outside the Trump International Hotel in New York on Tuesday in an angry response to a tweet by President-elect Donald Trump that flag burners should face legal consequences. Social media was itself ablaze on Tuesday in response to Trump's tweet, which suggested that burning the U.S. flag should be punishable by a year in jail or revocation of citizenship. Tuesday's protest in New York involves seven members of the Revolutionary Communist Party, a group that is not affiliated with the Communist Party of the United States and whose members participated in flag burning at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland in July. So, Jim, just as we mentioned a moment ago at how proficient Donald Trump is at getting the media to chase a whole bunch of stories that don't matter much when it comes to actual policy and governing, he's also extremely effective at getting the insane fringe left to look insane and totally fringe by getting them to try to defy something he says in a simple tweet.
I'd written this yesterday and said, come on, they're not going to be dumb enough to take the bait like this. You know, that obviously Trump says, I can't stand this. They know this bothers him. They're not dumb enough and stupid enough to actually start doing this, thinking that the joy of irking Trump with this image, well, not recognizing that they're alienating probably a good 70-80% of Americans by doing so. And the answer, Greg, is that yes, Jim, yes, of course they are. We are just that stupid. We're even more stupid than that. We're, you know, and so apparently, it was a small group and lefty Democrats are going to say, look, this is a small fringe group. I don't doubt that, but they were still dumb enough to do it. And now the video is going out across the whole country. And boy, what better way? Like, if anti-Trump protesters wanted to alienate everyone, I suppose maybe they could have marched around with signs saying we hate America. And it would have had roughly the same effect. That basically is it. This is the sort of thing we see from angry mobs protesting in the Middle East and around the world. This is a separate argument of whether it should be whether it's protected under the Constitution. Should the government punish you for this? Look, we can argue that. And I generally come down as a pretty extensive First Amendment absolutist. I don't think necessarily want the government punishing you for doing something, even if it offends a lot of people. That's what the politically correct crowd wants. But having said that, if you burn the flag, I kind of have the right to draw my own conclusions from you. And I tend to think of you're a crazy anti-American nut job if you tend to do so. If you want to get people to oppose Trump, like whether you realize it or not, you're in the persuasion business. And I think these angry protesters, like they don't really do that. It's not really about persuading the majority. It's not really about reaching out to people who don't already agree. It's really an exercise in sort of this narcissism, in this moral preening to themselves, not to anybody else. It's very interesting. Like they don't realize how alienating and off-putting their tactics and rhetoric and style and philosophy is. So this looks like a formula to make the left, or at least the hard left, even more insular, even more fringe, even more disconnected from the rest of society, which will only strengthen Trump in the years to come. And so, yeah, they are that dumb. And, I guess we can make a lot of money betting on the stupidity of the left, can't we, Greg?
You can make a lot of money betting on the stupidity of the left, but they can also make some money as well. So you want to make sure you're not bankrolling these people inadvertently, which leads to this question. Would you switch phone companies if you knew your current carrier was using your money to fund radical nut jobs like we've seen in the streets of New York and in other streets and cities around the country ever since this election, protesting things they're not even sure what they're protesting about and just basically demanding an end to the Electoral College and all sorts of other things. They might want to restrict your Second Amendment rights, promote abortion through Planned Parenthood. But what if there was a liberal phone company targeting conservative candidates and organizations? And would you want to switch to a conservative phone company to help fight against that liberal agenda? Do you know if your current phone carrier is using your money to undermine what you believe in? Patriot Mobile is our sponsor today, and they've decided to take action.
Patriot Mobile offers nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices and donates up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. You get the same quality service, the latest and greatest devices like the Apple 6 and Galaxy S7, for example. That's the non-explosive kind. and competitive prices and center-right causes that you believe in. Finally, a mobile phone company that believes what you believe.
Patriot Mobile is America's only conservative phone company. The only one. It was created to fight for conservative causes and defend conservative candidates. So don't let the liberals and their phone company defeat our conservative leaders. Stand with Patriot Mobile and give voice to your conservative values with every single call, text, and status update. that you do. Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join the conversation. Again, 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. Three Martini Lunch is brought to you by Patriot Mobile. Make your cell phone company as conservative as you are. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. And Jim, on to our third good martini. And we had a different version of this a couple of weeks ago when we started to see some of the initial Trump appointments. And that was that it's nice that it's going to be kind of easy to confirm a lot of these people, assuming the Republicans all stick together in the Senate, because Harry Reid got so impatient about judicial nominees and other administration appointees that he just decided to pretty much nuke the filibuster with the exception of legislation and Supreme Court nominations. And now the Democrats don't like this very much at all. Chris Coons, recently reelected Democratic senator from Delaware, on with Kate Baldwin of CNN. And here's how that conversation went.
Democrats did it for themselves, and now Republicans can do it as well.
That's exactly right. The filibuster no longer acts as an emergency brake on the nomination. I do regret that. I frankly think many of us will regret that in this Congress because it would have been a terrific speed bump, potentially emergency brake, to have in our system to slow down the confirmation of extreme nominees. We're instead going to have to depend on the American people, on thorough hearings, and on persuading a number of Republicans in those cases where President-elect Trump might nominate someone who's just too extreme for the American people. I'll remind you that Secretary Clinton won the popular vote and that Democratic Senate candidates won more votes. So I don't think Trump has an overwhelming mandate, and I do think Republicans are conscious of that.
Jim, I just love how they keep throwing the popular vote out there, because that and $7 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. And Kamala Harris got more votes than the guy who got reelected in North Dakota. So clearly the numbers of the majority just don't matter. It's total votes. We just have no respect for states whatsoever. But it's kind of fun to watch the Democrats rue their spur-of-the-moment tactics when they didn't get their way a few years ago.
Save us from our own lack of foresight, Republicans. Look, we did something really stupid, and now you're obligated to do something to save us from the consequences of our actions. No, you moron. This is why you have to think ahead. You're not going to be in a majority forever. As much as I'm enjoying the Republican Senate majority, you know what? Someday Republicans will do stupid things on their own, or the economy will turn, or there'll be a giant scandal, or something will happen and Democrats will get control of the Senate again. May not happen for a long time. I'm hoping it doesn't happen for a long time, but it'll happen. And as a result of that, you want to preserve all the rights you have in the minority for the day you're in the minority. Or if you are willing to, if you do want to, you know, basically nuke the filibuster and create something where the, you know, 51 votes in the Senate can accomplish just about anything you want, that's fine. But you got to live with those consequences. And right now, Democrats in the Senate are having to live with those consequences. They have made their bed and now they get to sleep in it, even if it's, you know, lumpy and springs are coming through and it's full of rocks and all that other stuff. It's a bed of nails, you could say. So I'm just going to sit here and giggle all day long. And by the way, for all of the complaints about the liberal media and things like that, one, I want to salute. I'm on the Berman Baldwin show every now and then. One, for spotlighting this and kind of calling him out on this, and two, you can just kind of hear the incredulity in the voices when they say, "So you got rid of this, didn't you?" You know, and that they're too dignified and professional to ever say, "Senator, you're kind of stupid, aren't you?" But you can kind of, I don't know about you, Greg, I pick up that subtext.
Yeah, it's kind of there. It's like you really have no basis to make the argument you're trying to make here, whether it's about the rule being brought back.
In principle, you just want to win, basically, is what you're. You are a like a whiny toddler. You should just get what you want when you want it, despite what you said a few years ago and your claims of principles and blah, blah, blah.
Yes. I actually like the filibuster. I don't want it to be a simple majority in the Senate. That's what the House of Representatives is for. But the Democrats made their own bed here, and if they think Republicans are about to fix their mistake for them, no way. Jim, it's good to have three good martinis, don't you think?
Maybe we'll try to keep it a streak. Come on, world, cooperate with us. Give us nothing but good news for the next 24 hours.
Ah, if only. Jim, have a great day. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks again to our sponsor, Patriot Mobile, reminding you that they offer nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices, and they donate up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT or go to patriotmobile.com/ricochet. And join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.